We are on the air. All right, so interesting question was sent in. A person was driving a car from New York to Florida with very valuable things inside the car, and he was driving for an owner, for a friend. So a friend asked him, please drive this car down from New York to Florida, and if you stop on the way to a hotel, make sure you park it in front of the hotel where there are cameras right in front of the door. Do not park the car in a parking lot. So now, I get a call midnight, America time. This person drives up to the hotel, and the hotel tells them there is no parking. There is no parking in front of the hotel. You can do valet parking, or you can park across the street in an open lot. What should he do? Hello, Jay. What should he do? Okay, so again, he's driving this car for someone else. He has a lot of valuables in the car. The owner said, do not park it in a lot, only right in front of the hotel. And there is no parking in front of the hotel, and it's midnight in America. So what should he do? So, like this, when you take someone's car and you are watching their stuff, you are a shomer. If you're a shomer, you cannot be negligent. In this case, it would be big time negligence to do valet parking, because valet parking, you're giving the keys to some random person who probably will spend the whole night looking through the car, deciding what he can take without you noticing. And therefore, that would be a terrible idea if you're a shomer. To park it in the outdoor lot, the owner told you don't want that. He doesn't want that. And you said, okay. So now you're stuck. So I gave him two choices, which is you could either call the owner at midnight and say, listen, this is the situation. How do you want to deal with it? It's your stuff, your car, tell what you want. Or you have to bring all the stuff from the car inside. But you cannot just decide what you want to do without what you're a shomer. If you're a shomer, it has to be in front of you the whole time. If you want to sleep in the car, you can sleep in the car. But if you're a shomer and he told you that it would be negligent for you to give it over to the valet, it would be negligent for you to park it where he told you not to park it. And therefore, what he ended up doing was calling the owner at midnight. And the owner said, it's okay, you can park in the outdoor lot. And that's what happened, and everything was fine. Okay, another sign, hello, Bensi. Another sign that sent in was, based on last week's share, we learned that you can't leave an egg overnight, whether it's raw or whether it's cooked, but you still can't leave an egg overnight. So this family left the egg overnight and then put it on their challah. Hello, Yoni. So they have this egg, which you're supposed to throw it out because you cannot leave the egg overnight. It was not salted. It was not mixed with anything. And then they painted it on their challah, and now they have a lot of challahs. What should they do with the challahs? So we looked into it. It turned out it's a really big fight because even we did learn you're supposed to throw it out because it could be dangerous. And therefore, some say in this case, you have to throw out all those challahs because that dangerous egg is now put on top of all these challahs. And therefore throw them all out. However, there is another opinion that says, since it was cooked already, and it's for Shabbos, so together, the fact that it was cooked, it's going to be used for the mitzvah of Shabbos, nothing bad will happen, and therefore they could keep the challah. And that seems to be how we paskin, so he will be able to keep the challah. Another shayla sent in was, are you allowed to eat when your neighbors or your friends send food over to you? You don't know their kashas level, you don't know. There's no hechsher when your neighbor sends you some food, can you eat it? So it breaks down like this. If the neighbor or your friend sells you food, that's their business. They sell food and they don't have a hechsher, then you should not buy it, you should not eat it. Because anytime that there's money involved, you need to have a hechsher. It used to be not like that, but times have changed, perhaps people have changed. Anytime that there's money involved, it has to be a hechsher. And therefore, if you're going to buy something and says everything is kosher, I wouldn't trust it because money, you need a hechsher. But if that same person were to send you a gift, here, have some food. So then as long as you don't have any reason to doubt them, right? It's not like they have, you know, McDonald's bags around their house. There's nothing suspect about them. So then you would be allowed to eat their food. Okay, so that's how it breaks down. Money, no. For free, yes. Now, I mean, what level, you need to make sure that they are God-fearing people. Now, if you have
what's considered God-fearing?
What?
They keep Shabbos. What's considered God-fearing?
Yeah, they keep Shabbos. To the best of your knowledge, they keep kosher, and they're within your standards. Like, again, you didn't cross-examine them what exactly do you eat? What don't you eat?
Is following Hilchos Nida considered God-fearing?
If they're not following Hilchos Nida, that could be a problem. Now, why are they not following Hilchos Nida? Is it because they don't care or they don't know? I mean, it could be whatever they know, they keep. Whatever they don't know, they don't keep. But as
so that would make it problematic with food, no?
No, it wouldn't. If they don't follow Hilchos Nida, it makes the food tamei, so you can't, if it'd be truma, you couldn't eat it. But it's still kosher food. It'd be fine. And as far as money is concerned, because when people are involved with money, sometimes they'll cut corners, sometimes there'll be a shayla, they'll be afraid to ask the shayla because of they'll lose their parnasa, and therefore they'll just say, oh, it's probably fine. Okay, so those are some interesting shaylas sent in. Well, let's go back to Hilchos Kashas. Okay, this is part 3 of 3. Last part of Hilchos Kashas we'll do. I mentioned next week we'll do Hilchos Hanukkah and go over as many halakhas as we can about Hanukkah. As far as now, Hilchos Kashas. So we learned last week about mixtures and food with heat. Now we'll go through all the objects and kalim and electrical items that you have in your kitchen and how things work. So we'll start with the dishwasher. Ideally, if you want to have a kosher dishwasher, you need to have two. One for milk, one for fleishig. If you only have one, you should really designate it only for one. Only for milk or only for fleishig. If that's not a possibility, and you need to have one dishwasher and use it for both, the only or ideal way to deal with it is get two separate racks. One used for fleishig, one used for milk. And when you wash the fleishig rack, the fleishig stuff in the fleishig rack, do not have the milchik rack in there. Take the milchik rack out. Only wash the fleishik rack. Then in between, you should run a cycle with nothing in there. So you're going to do a fleishik cycle with just fleishik stuff. An empty cycle. And then you can do a milchik cycle. And then an empty cycle. And then a fleishik cycle. That's the way the Ramesha was okay with. If you were to have separate racks and run a cycle in the middle. Okay, that's as far as dishwasher. As far as microwaves, very difficult to have one microwave for milchik and fleishik. Ideally, you want to have one for milchik, one for fleishik, or if you only have one, designated for only one. There are those that say, yes, with somebody. There are those who say that you can have a fleishik microwave, but cover the milchik. Very difficult, because it has to be really tightly covered, and most likely it'll become uncovered and or just not get cooked. So ideally, do not want to do that. If you did cook exposed milchik in your microwave that's fleishig, you've chafed up your microwave and you chafed up the food. And therefore, it's not worth it. If you did chafe up your microwave, what you do is clean it out, wait 24 hours, put a bowl of water in there for 5 to 10 minutes, and then that will kasha the microwave. So if you want to start from fresh from now on, clean it, 24 hours, bowl of water for like 5 to 10 minutes, and that will kasha the microwave. Now, as far as spoons, forks, cups, so again, you want to designate milchik and fleishik. As long as everything is cold, there will be no problems. But let's say you stuck your fleishik spoon into your milchik pasta. So you now have chafed up your spoon. Similar to what we learned last week as far as pots. The forks and silverware will have a similar concept to pots, which is if you mix it up with the wrong gender, you'll ruin the spoon and fork. If everything's clean but hot, you will ruin nothing. But again, it's very similar to du chazar of the halachas of the pots. That's what's going to be by the forks and the spoons. Again, try to keep it separate. If you mix them up, milk and meat, you will mess them up. If everything is par, just it was cooked in the other pots, it'll be fine. As far as like this, if you find a milk spoon in a fleishig drawer or vice versa, you can assume it's fine. The only issue is when you're actually chafing it up, putting the milk with the meat. Now, talking about silverware, if you did chafe them up and they're metal, you can kasha them, clean it, wait 24 hours, put them into a bowl of boiling water. Ashkenazim do not kasha glass, and therefore if you chafe up glass, you will have ruined it. Svardim hold glass can become chafe. So for all our Svardi brethren here, if you have a glass mug, you can use it for milk and a fleishig. It's fine because they hold it doesn't absorb. Anyway, so that's as far as glass, but Ashkenazim hold glass absorbs and you can't kasher it just like you can't kasher pottery. Okay, moving on to sinks. Ideally, you would like to have a milchik sink and a fleishik sink, and keep your milchik stop in the milchik, and fleishik in the fleishik. And when you're washing dishes, just make sure that nothing squirts from one sink to the other sink, which could happen. If you only have one sink, what you need to do is have a basin or a rack if you want to put the stuff in the sink, because we're going to treat the sink as if it's treif, because the sink will have had hot water, hot milchik, hot fleishik. So the sink itself may be treif. And if you don't want to put any of your dishes on the sink itself, so what you would want to do is have a basin or a rack that holds the dishes while you're washing them inside the sink. That's okay. But let's explain the lung. The lung disease, the real issue is, anytime you have cold water, there's nothing to worry about. If everything is cold, you can wash them all together because nothing is absorbing. Just wash everything off. It becomes an issue when you're washing with water, which is yad saletus, 110 degrees or more. That water has the ability to pull out the flavoring from one to another. Therefore, if there is mamushis or hot water, it could create absorbing going from one to another. And therefore, that would be the issue. That's when you have to ask a shaila. So if everything is cold and you mix them up together, it's fine. But if you're not doing that and there's hot, and mamushis is a problem. As far as soap goes, absolutely. Many hold, if you're washing with soap, that will solve the problem because soap will ruin any flavor that's there. But it's a bidyavid. Some don't like that issue. And therefore, don't try to wash everything together. Oh, there's soap, it's okay. If it happened, then you can rely on the soap ruining the flavor of everything. Okay, now, stovetop. Okay, here's the issue with stovetop. So there's three parts we need to discuss. There's the above ground, the ground, and the below ground. Meaning, you have the pot. You have the pots touching each other. If there is any real residue, Benji, going from one to the other, that could be a problem. So you want to keep the residues for sure separate. But if soap is there, it could ruin even the residue. Okay, now as far as stovetop, if you have stovetop that has four burners, let's say, and you want to cook milchik and fleishik, it's fine. Just, you have to make sure, use common sense, stuff isn't going to fly from one to the other. When stuff is bubbling or frying, stuff tends to fly. If milchik flies in the fleishik or vice versa, you just ruin the pot or the food. So if you're going to cook two at the same time, it's fine. Just make sure there's a safe, healthy distance between the two. Now, if the pots themselves touch, it's no problem as long as they were clean and dry. So you have a pot of challah and a pot of milchik pasta, and the two pots touch. As long as the outside of the pots were dry and clean, there's nothing to worry about. If, however, there is some mamushes on the outside of the pot, that could trafe up the other pot and the contents. It's a big shaila, you'd have to ask. But as long as it's dry and clean and they touch, it's fine. Now, the grates, the actual stove top itself, where the pots are sitting on, that stuff, even though milchik and fleishik pour there, and you're putting a fleishik pot in the same place where milchik spilled yesterday, it's fine because it gets burnt up. Normally it happens immediately. The actual grates themselves, or the stovetop itself, will normally burn up anything that got there. And therefore, it's fine. However, if you do see that there's still residue, milchik residue, or fleishik residue, you cannot put the other gender pot on top of that. If I see that there's spill, a milchik spill on the grates themselves, I can't go ahead and put a fleishik pot on top of that because that milchik would go in. Normally, it's not relevant because normally it burns out immediately. But if you see it didn't, for whatever reason, you would have to clean it off first. No major cleaning, just get rid of that mamushes of milk or fleishik. Now, that's as far as the stove top. Now, the floor of the stove, okay, let's say, right, a lot of times food falls onto that, we're calling the floor of the stove top. That is has the same halacha as every other pot that we've discussed, which is, if it's a ben yono, meaning there's fleishik or milchik that fell into that pot on the floor of the stovetop in the last 24 hours, that will absorb and give off the flavor. So therefore, if you have, let's say, fleishik that fell on the stovetop floor, and now within 24 hours, milchik is falling there, it trafes off that food. So you can't eat off of it. So the only way you can eat off the floor of the stovetop is if you know within the last 24 hours there was no other gender hot food on that stovetop, just like a pot. Okay, so in general, we don't eat off of it because it's hard to know. But if you do know within the last 24 hours there's nothing there and it's clean, if it's dirty now, so it's no good. But as long as it's clean now and within the last 24 hours nothing fell on that stovetop, so So then when your food falls onto it, you could eat it. Okay, that's the stovetop. Okay, we'll do two more, countertops and ovens. So first the countertop. Okay, ideally, you want to have a flat shake countertop and a milk countertop and put your flat shake pots on the flat shake and milk on the milk. However, let's say you only have one or you mix them up. Here's where it goes. If you have a flat shake pot that you put on a clean, dry milk countertop, there's no problems. Even if there was hot milk there 10 minutes ago, if now it's clean and dry, that flat shake pot will not absorb anything. Even if it's hot, that's fine. If, however, there is real milk there right now, or there's water, and you put a hot pot on top of that milk countertop, through that water or the mamushes, it could travel through into the pot and would be a problem. Okay? So again, so if you have flat shake and milk countertops, great, keep them all separate. And if you mess up, as long as it's dry and clean, there's no problem at all. If, however, there is wet or mamushes of the other gender and it's hot, then there's a problem. If it's cold, there's no problem, just wipe it off. But if it's hot and mamushes or liquid, you have a real shaila, you should call someone and ask the shaila. Okay, that's as far as countertops. Now we're gonna talk about the oven, okay? The oven is a big tumult, and here's the way it goes. Ideally, a milchik oven and a fleishik oven, and you have no shilas. Great. But now, let's say you don't have a milchik oven or fleishik oven, or you're cooking challah, parv stuff. What do you do? So here's, let's assume you have one oven. So let's say you have a fleishik oven. So your fleishik oven, you cook everything you want. It's fleishik. Great. Now you want to make challah. And you want to eat that challah with butter. So can I go ahead and cook a challah in my fleishik oven and then eat it with butter immediately? So the answer is like this. If the oven has no mamushes, no liquid fleishik in there at the time, then it's fine. So like this, at 9 o'clock, you made your chicken with liquid. It's all over the place. You got to clean off all that liquid if you want to cook something part in that oven. But let's say you do. You take out your chicken. At 9:30, it's clean. There's no liquid there. Either there was no spill or there was a spill, but you cleaned it up. You can now go ahead and put in your challah because there's no fleishik liquid in the oven at the time. And when you pull out that challah, you can eat the challah with butter. Now, if the challah touched the fleishik racks where there are pieces of fleishik, well, then it's a fleishik challah. You can't eat with butter. But as long as you put the challah in with tin foil or you put the challah in on its own tray, and therefore the challah is not touching fleishik, even though it's in a fleishik oven, you can eat it with milchik. Same thing with fish. And here's the kicker, even with milchik, even though we want to keep everything separate, if you know you have one oven, a fleishik oven, and you need to cook milchik, what you should do is make sure it's clean. Ideally, cover the milchik, cook it covered. If you can't, whatever the recipe calls for, you cannot cook the milchik covered, what you really should do is kasher out the oven, which means turn on the highest for 40 minutes to an hour. That's the best. But if you can't do that, then make sure it's clean, and then you can stick in your milchik food into that oven and it'll stay kosher. The reason is because an oven is not like a pot. You can't cook a milchik thing in a fleishik pot because there it's touching the actual surface. In an oven, it's not touching the surface. It's just whatever steam vapors are going around. And therefore, as long as it's clean and there's nothing in there at the time, that is fine. Okay, that is a wrap on that part. Now, moving on to the next part, bugs. We do not eat bugs. They're not kosher, and they come within many averas. So no eating bugs. 1 second, there is this annoying. Hold on. Okay, so now, if you have a bug, get rid of it. Let's say a bug falls into your soup or your chalent. You can pull it out. It will not trape up the soup or the chalent. But you cannot eat it. Now, let's say a bug fell in and you can't find it. If a full bug fell into your soup or your chalent, you cannot eat that soup or chalent. You can't eat it because it's not batal. A full bug is not batal. So if you take it out, we're not worried about the flavor. The flavor of the bug doesn't ruin anything because it's disgusting. But the bug itself, if it's full, will ruin your whole supercharger. So you must get it out. Now here's a big thing. We have fruits. Fruits, we want to check the fruits, make sure there are no bugs. I'm not getting involved which fruits need to be checked. I don't know. But let's just say there's a certain fruit or vegetable that has to be checked. Okay? So now, you don't want to check it, and you can't check it. Here's the heter, which is, as long as you don't know that there's a vadai bug, you can blend it. You know, meaning take a thing of fruits. You look at it, you don't see any bugs, but you don't know, you're not really checking it. And you don't want to check it well. So because it's suffix, if there's a bug there, you can put those fruits in a blender, blend it all up, and then it's fine. The reason is because you don't know that there's a bug there. After you blend it up, you know for sure there's no full bug. It's not a barrier, it's not a full bug. At most, there are bug little pieces. Those bug little pieces are now butthole in the big mixture of all the fruits. Okay? So therefore, whatever needs to be checked, check it if you want to eat it whole. But if you don't want to check it and you don't know there's a bug, you are allowed to blend it up and then eat the mixture, assuming that A, there's no bug, and even if there was a bug, it's now a bug mush, and therefore there'd be no problem. It's not a scam, my friend, because the lumness is you don't know there's a bug in the first place. And even if there is a bug, it's now batel because it's now pieces. All right, now, fine. Let's move on. Last topic is tefillas kelim. Tefillas kelim is like this. Anytime that you buy a kli from a guy, whether it is new or used, if it's used, you have to kash it. But whether it's new or used, you have to do what's called tefillas kelim and putting into a mikvah. And in some cases, you make a bracha on it, and we'll explain what that means right now. If it is metal or glass, then that tefillah requires a bracha. If it is teflon, if it is aluminum, that's not halachically metal. And therefore, you have to put in the mikvah, but no bracha on them. So the bracha is only on silver, metal, fine steel, metals, heavy metals. They need to have tefillah with a bracha. Glass or metals. But if it is aluminum, teflon, or pottery, you do tefillah, but no bracha. If it's rubber or plastic, then you don't need to do tefillah at all. Okay, that's the general breakdown of or wood. Wood, plastic, rubber, no tefillah, metal, glass, yes, aluminum, teflon, pottery, tefillah without a bracha. Now, the tefillah can be done at night. It cannot be done on Shabbos. It cannot be done by a katan, unless you're watching him. So you need to do it yourself. You should remove everything, all the stickers and everything that's on there. If you forgot to remove the sticker, so as long as it is on a minority and you don't care about it, it's fine. But if it's a certain spot where you're definitely going to remove it, you care. It's like right there, smack center. Then you care about that. You would have to take it off and do the mikvah and go to mikvah again. Because you're makbid on that, and that would be a chatzitza. If you buy disposable things, so again, if it's disposable plastic, you never need it anyway. But let's say it's a disposable aluminum pan or glass you're going to throw out. Anything which is disposable and you plan on using it only one time, you do not need to do tefillah on it at all. If, however, it's disposable and you plan on reusing it, there's a big machlekes about that. So you have a disposable thing, aluminum pan, for example, that most people throw it out, but you want to use it, multiple uses. You can do that, but a big machlokas, I recommend traveling it without a bracha. Again, big machlokas about it, but that seems to be what my place can say, which is do tefillah without a bracha on those things. Anything that does not come in contact with food doesn't need it. For example, corkscrew, can opener, those things don't need it. But if it's going to be coming in contact with the food, pots, containers, all different cooking utensils actually touch the food, needs it. And as far as electrical items, it's been a big tumult in the world, but it seems to be they need it and they don't really break. Just don't use them while they're still wet. Wait until they dry off, but go a quick dip in the mikvah, let it dry out in the sun a little bit, and then you can use them. Okay, that is a wrap on Tefillas Kelim. We'll now move on to Tefila, Bitachon, and the Parsha. All right, so we are up to, one second, let me read some questions over here. No, you're not allowed to use it one time. People talk about that. There's no source for that. The best of my knowledge, If you have a kli which needs to be tovel, you cannot use it one time before toveling it. The only time that heter probably came about by items which are made for one-time use, disposable, then they don't need mikvah at all. But the time which needs the mikvah, it has to be done even before the first time. And I also want to mention, actually, if you forgot, you didn't do tefillas kelim, and you cooked food with a pot that wasn't toveled, or you ate food, it doesn't shrink up the food. So toveling does not shrink up the food, but you definitely have to do it even for the first use. If it's Shabbos and you can't do tefila, whatever it is, or there's no mikveh around, what you can do is give it to a guy. Give it a present to a guy. If the guy owns it, he doesn't need to do tefila, and you can use his kelim. Okay, that's the heter if it's Shabbos or there's no mikveh around. All right.
Can you use an item that's owned by a different Jew if it wasn't toveled?
No, good question. No. If Reuven has something which wasn't toveled, Shimon cannot use it. Again, it won't trade off the food, but that article needs to have the mikveh that before being used. Okay. Tefillah. So we started certain kavanas during Shema. So we've learned until now is that you are supposed to have kavana knowing that it's a mitzvah. That's ma'akev. I'm coming to a mitzvah. That's ma'akev. You're supposed to have kavana for the first pasuk, what it means. That's ma'akev. Kavana for the rest is not ma'akev. However, it is definitely recommended to know what you're saying. And now the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Samech Aleph that you're supposed to say Shema with kavana and with fear, ima and yira, with fear. And Mishnah explains why. Why is that? Because we say in Shema, b'chol nafshecha. What does b'chol nafshecha mean? It means with all your soul. What that really means is you're willing to give up your life for Hashem. That if someone puts a gun to your head and said, avodah zarah, gilah rai, shekel damim, certain affairs, you're going to have to give up your life. And therefore, when you say b'chol nafshecha, you're supposed to be having that in mind. That's the kavana. That I'm willing to really give up my life. I'm being makabel ol malchus shemayim. Shem, you're the king. I'm accepting you. And so much so that I'm going to give my life for you. And therefore, the whole Shema, Shulchan Aruch is saying, should be said with this fear, because you may have to do that, and you have to be willing to do that. Okay, so that's a kavana to have in mind. We say, b'chol nafshecha, which the Shulchan Aruch holds, it extends the whole Shema. It's going to be said in a different way now. When you realize that, you'll be saying the whole Shema with a certain level of fear. Okay, Chavis Avavis, we're finishing the Psicha to Shah B'tachon. So he discusses over here, someone who believes in Hashem should not work too hard, should not take a job that will be too physically strenuous, draining, traveling too much. He says, if you have B'tachon, you're going to realize Hashem will give you the Parnasa. Why do you have to go kill yourself for it? Why would you have to go ahead and take a job that will really hurt your body? He tells over stories where people travel and like really kill themselves, kill their family. Why? Oh, I need to make money. If you're lacking bitachon, then that's the only way you make money. You're gonna have to do that. But if you get to the level where you know Hashem is gonna provide for you no matter what. Now you can't just sit down, put your hands out like I do, and just hope it gets filled up. But what you need to do is you have to do a level of stylus. But what's the level of stylus? It doesn't require you to do backbreaking work and kill yourself, because that's the only way you're gonna make money. That's not true. You can make money doing other things if you understand it all comes from Hashem. And the last thing I end off with in the Nakdama is that someone's boteach b'Hashem will be sameach b'chol davar shehashem esavri v'lov. If someone has b'tach Hashem, he'll always be happy on simcha no matter what Hashem brings him, even if it's against what he thought, what he thinks he needs, or what he wants. If you're boteach, Hashem is only doing good for you. I'll tell you a story. There's a certain bachar who was having a hard time with shidduchim, and he asked me, go to a Sephardi Mekubal, a specific one, and find out what a school it is to get married. So I went. I went over, waited in line 14 hours. I got to him. I'm kidding. I got to him, and he said, no schoolers. Do this. Have bitachon and simcha. That's what he said. I said, well, how do you get the two of them? He says, well, if you have bitachon, then you'll have simcha. And I'm sure he was referring to this Chovas HaLevavos. That's exactly what he's saying here. If you have bitachon, you will have simcha, because you understand that everything that's happening for you, even though it's hard and difficult and terrible for you, you think it's for sure for your good. And therefore, if you can get to that level, then you can have a certain level of simcha. Ah, everything is good, even though you're suffering. Obviously, it's really hard to get to that, but that is the lesson he's saying over here. Sometimes we talk about it, we will get to that level. Now, on the parsha is like Yishlach. Right, so Yaakov was coming to meet Esav for the first time in many years, and Yaakov was scared, And he davened to Hashem, protect me miyad achi, miyad Esav. Protect me from my brother, protect me from Esav. So the Beis HaLevi asks, what's this double lashon? We all know very well who Esav is. We all know very well that's his brother. So the Pasuk could just say, protect me from Esav, protect me from my brother. Why the Pasuk had to say this double lashon? Protect me from my brother, from Esav. So he says, in relationships with people, you have two types of people. You have the people you're scared, well, forget the par people, but the fleshy and the milking. You have people that you're scared of and people that are your friends. So now, when you meet someone that you're scared of, you need the daven to protect me from the physical harm. But what about your friends? What about people that you're friendly with that you're not so scared of? He says, you also have to daven that they shouldn't be bad influences on you, shouldn't take you off the path. So Yaakov was davening, if he's going to come to me as an Esav, as my enemy, protect me, physically, protect me. But what if he's going to come to me as Achi, my brother, my loving brother, you must, hang out with me. If he does that, I also need protection because he could be a very bad influence for me. It could be very bad for me. And therefore, the tefillah was protect me from both of them, from Achi and from Esav, because both of them could be dangerous. And that's something which we all have to reevaluate your relationships. Is that friend such a good influence on you? Is he really good for you? We should be diving to Hashem and protect me from that person, even though he's my good friend. That's one thing. A second thing was Dina. Right? This is Parsha. Dina was taken and violated by Shechem. It's interesting, if you pay attention to Rashi and the Gemara's, it keeps throwing out different reasons why it happened. One reason is because Yaakov put Dina in a box. Another reason is because Yaakov delayed on the road. Another reason is because Dina was a yatsanis. Dina would go out of the house, right? Women are supposed to stay home. And Dina was going out. And that's why it happened. So which one is it? Like, there's multiple things going on over here. But I believe what's obvious is that Hashem never does anything to anyone without taking to cheshbon all of the people affected by it. And everyone being affected by it has to deserve that as well. So therefore, Dina, it was very bad for Dina. She had to deserve it. Yaakov was very bad for Yaakov. He had to deserve it. It had to be something wrong that Yaakov did to get it and that Dina did to get it. And the timing also. Though anytime Hashem punishes someone, everything is taken into account. So in this case, the timing was now because you delayed on the road. It's going to affect you, Yaakov, because you locked her in a box. It's going to affect you, Dina, because you were Yatsanis. You were someone that went out of the house too much. So it could be that's what, there's no machokas over here. Everything is needed. And that's why anytime Hashem punches anyone, it's affecting your friend, your father, your sister, your mother. Yeah, that was all part of Hashem's cheshbon. Everyone involved. So if you're not going to do something hard, but someone is, it's affecting you, it's part, not that's your fault, but there's something you need to do because perhaps Hashem is trying to punish you that way as well. Not directly, but indirectly. It's not just a happenstance that you're being affected by your friend or your family. That was all part of Hashem's plan as well, as you see here by Dina. Okay, that's a wrap. Missing next week, Hilchos Chanukah, and have a good Shabbos.
Bye. Wait, Rebecca. Yeah.